This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 226, Robo Everything. Hello, and welcome to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm delighted to be here, and even more delighted to be joined by my co-host and friend, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
I'm delighted to be here, and that you're delighted by my delight. We're both delighting in the delightness of De Groovy.
But is it a caramel delight is really the question.
No. Too much sugar.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Great. All right. Let's get to it, because this show is like all about the bot. And the first bot that we've got to talk about is the lawn mowing robot. So iRobot is getting into the game here after countless speculations and whatnot about robot lawn mowing, and you found this fun article from Gizmodo. What's your sense, and how quickly are you planning to buy an iMower or iRobot?
This one's actually interesting. I thought I remembered rumors years ago at CES of all these robotic lawnmowers, and the part that was really a hassle with them was kind of like the electric the invisible fence that people have for their pets. where you put this wire around the edge of your property, and the moving of the sensor across that wire barrier causes shock and dismay. No, just shock.
Right.
The electric mower robots were basically designed that way some years back, and I could have swore that 3 or 4 years ago, iRobot had done a Roomba for your lawn, basically. What's interesting about this one is now they're using beacons, right? So you're basically setting up a blanket area based off of the positioning of the beacons. And we've talked about beacons on the last show, and we've been talking about beacons more and more, it seems like, as a way to have very pinpoint accurate triangulation of coordinates in a 2 or 3 dimensional space for robots and other things. So I thought this was interesting. The biggest thing, and I haven't actually seen one of these in public yet, is you know how you walk around the neighborhood, you drive around, and you see that one yard that just has those very beautiful lines where the mowers have gone back and forth, and you have this two-color shimmy-looking thing of the grass being cut in one direction on one line, in the other direction, the other line. And, you know, I'll admit, we use a lawn service just because I have so little free time. I don't want to spend my free time mowing the lawn.
So, absolutely.
And they use one of those giant, big industrial lawnmowers. Plus weed whackers and blowers and all this other stuff. And you never get those beautiful lines. So I'm wondering if one of these little electric mowers, robot mowers, can bring those lines back. And for that, I think, you know, a $1,500 or less investment for a mower, and that's the only payment because it's mulching and everything else, might be worth it to get the lines back.
Yeah, maybe and I do like the lines. You know, that is one of my, you know, nice things about mowing a big piece of lawn. If it's a small lawn, which is kind of what I have right now, getting the lines working right doesn't necessarily get there. But the reading through this particular mower, I thought it was interesting too that it's also using beacons, because I would have imagined that you could do something like painting the lawn, right? You know, like you could pilot the mower around your lawn once, maybe even with your phone, or walk behind it or something like that. And then once it knew that and knew relatively where it was, you wouldn't need those beacons anymore, because your yard is not going to like grow, right?
That's the interesting thing. Thinking about that, we have a lot of natural area in our yard. We've got our you know, areas where there are bushes and other kind of low ground cover. We have rock covering instead of mulch or leaf or whatever. And the mowers right now will sometimes, and I don't know how they do this, right? But they'll kick rocks into the yard. It's like,
yes,
these are big river rocks. You have to be driving the mower over the rocks for that to happen.
Yes.
Why are you mowing the rocks? They're rocks.
And
so some of the plant cover may, because it grows, right, get and change the shapes ever so slightly. But I think you're right. If you painted it once, for the most part, other than falling debris, like branches during storms and things like that, it shouldn't be an issue.
Well, I mean, it's yard munching, to borrow from Waze, isn't it?
Yep.
Where you would just say, like, this is my yard. Or, oh, shoot, what was that game, that the area game that you used to, like, you would try to take over more and more area?
It was like a Monopoly.
Well, no, it wasn't Monopoly, but it was a video game or you know, an old cell phone game
where
you would just try to grab space, and there's a spark that kind of chased you, and then there was
and you're trying to, like, that game.
Yeah.
I love that game. That's the best game ever.
I can't remember the name of that game.
The game with the stuff.
That's what I'm thinking about from the painting idea. And then I did take a look at the Husqvarna to just see what that one was like, because that's what this article compares and contrasts it to. And I do have to say the Husqvarna, you know, looks more like a mower. The iRobot one looks more like, I don't know, a turntable with an antenna or something. I'm not sure. And I like the idea of the level of control that you could do, right? Mm-hmm. So you could choose, you know, how much of the lawn you're going to clip when you do it, you know, maybe things around patterns. You know, I like the idea that you could set it up for rain sensing and, you know, only mow it when it's absolutely needed, and keeping it at the, like, the perfect height and mow frequently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know. There's some neat things about this lawn mowing robotic sort of thing, but they are also, like, wacky, crazy expensive, like the Husqvarna ones. Shoot, what do they do?
$1,299 going up to $3,500.
Yes. Yes.
Basically the biggest thing impacting price is working area capacity.
Right.
So for $1,299, you get one that does a quarter of an acre and takes an hour to charge. And for a gazillion dollars more, you get one that does 1.25 acres.
So you almost would think you could get two of the little ones and just let those go at it, right?
Yeah, and have one mow while the other one charges.
Yeah, or something like that. I mean, they could mow overnight, right?
It's 56 to 58 decibels of sound when it's mowing. How loud is that?
Well,
I know the concert that supposedly was breaking people's eardrums was 200 decibels.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know if that's a logarithmic scale or geometric scale in sound, but I don't have a mental model for what 58 decibels of sound is like.
Well, they do say that it is discreet and silent at all times, so we'd have to see how silent it is. I don't know. We should test that out. I'm sure there's a website for it.
Yeah.
So I was reading the comments at the bottom of the iRobot article, and it was really funny about this guy named Michael Henderson, who writes, "So instead of drinking a cold beer after mowing my lawn, I can just sit on the porch and get hammered drunk while the robot does it. I like this plan." And somebody replied to him, is like, "Well, there's a flaw in your plan. Another robot is needed to bring the beer. And I'm not kidding. I want iRobot to produce what I call the beer butler." Not to be, you know, undone by this, but there was a Forbes article, not talking about bringing beer, but about brewing beer and using artificial intelligence to be able to do that. So I thought that was pretty intriguing. I was also kind of intriguing that a number of the articles in here are focused on IPA, which would be like, well, I don't like that anyway. So that wouldn't be my kind of
I love a good IPA.
So
here's the interesting thing. So I'm like a Pilsner IPA drinker. Those are my two big drinks of when it comes to beer.
Yeah, Pils could be good.
Yeah, a good Pils is really good. And probably after mowing a lawn on a hot day, you probably want the Pilsner. But I was reading the article and they were talking about the Champion Brewing's MLIPA, meaning machine learning, right? And they're like, well, we looked at the top 10 best-selling IPAs and the 10 worst-selling brands, and we use that as part of the algorithm. And I'm sitting there going, you know, depending on how they define marketing. Best and worst, that's marketing. It has nothing to do with flavor.
No, I was the same. I skipped that one because it was about IPAs because, like, yeah, I don't care. Mm-hmm, but I did like the robotic barkeep.
Yes, RoboBeer.
Right. So RoboBeer is a robot who looks at you to determine – how you like your beer poured and get the absolute proper amount of foam pour after pour based on the way you like it. And what it does is it senses what you like, and the AI behind that now pours you the perfect beer. So I thought that was pretty darn funny.
Well, you know, the really interesting thing, since we're going to talk about the appropriate amount of foam. So growing up in Germany, my grandfather used to say that it takes 7 minutes to pour a Pils, right? A good Pilsner takes 7 minutes to pour. And that is because what you're supposed to do is fill the glass with foam, let it settle out, fill it with foam, let it settle out, fill it with foam until you have about a nice inch and a half thick head of foam on top of the beer. Now it's ready to drink, right? And I like that because it gives you the aroma before you drink. You actually smell the beer and taste it that way before you actually have a nice sip of it.
Anticipation.
And it tends to have a nice thick head, not a thin, crappy head on it. Now, when you go to most places nowadays and you order a Pilsner or any beer for that matter, they tend to pour it at such a strong angle to make sure there's not a bit of foam in the glass, because you want to give the person all the beer you can give them. And it's interesting, those two ends of the spectrum on foaminess on beer. And I wanted to know what your opinion was on the head of a beer.
You know, there's a degree of perfectness. So if you're having a Guinness, you want to have that perfect, you know, like, half a centimeter of foam that's right there.
Yeah, and a Guinness fills as foam too, right? I mean, you can see it as it's settling out. It's got that nice kind of all the
reverse rain.
Yeah,
is what I call
bubbles
it.
Are just kind of. Yes.
Yeah, I love that. I know that, you know, this is an area where you and I don't agree. You've got your IPAs and I've got my Hefeweizen and the Hefeweizen shouldn't have a lot of foam either.
It shouldn't be a lot of Hefeweizen.
Some, you know, hey, if your beer is good enough to chew, it's a good beer. So that's kind of my thing. And as long as we're kind of on the whole degree of foaminess, an espresso needs to have a good crema to it as well. And I guess there's probably a percentage to that, that it's maybe like 5 to 15% should be crema for the top to just really be about right. I don't know. I hadn't thought about it in numerical terms, but
you just know
when it's right. When you look at it, it's like, that's right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Love that. Actually, I was in our favorite coffee shop, Bean Traders, just recently, and this guy was walking out and told Dave, the owner and bean meister that he is, Dave, that was the best espresso I've ever had in my entire life. And I was like, see, Dave, that was pretty darn good, wasn't it?
And Dave
said, absolutely true.
Yes, it was.
Yes. So staying on the theme of robotics and robo things, there is an article you found from The Verge about robocallers. And the numbers are just astounding, and it's not just astounding.
It's insane.
I'm a victim of this stuff too,
all the time.
And I don't give my cell phone out, and I'm just like, I'm getting multiple calls every day from these numbers. I keep blocking them, but they know better, and they keep switching their call from numbers. It's 26.3 billion spam calls a year.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah. Yeah, this is this, and that's just in the U.S. That's just in the U.S. Imagine globally. And I don't answer my phone.
Yep.
It's that simple. I don't answer my phone. On our home line, we actually have an answering machine. If you want to call me, start talking, because the answering machine will kick in, and if I don't hear a voice that I recognize, it's just going to stay on the answering machine. And most spam calls immediately hang up as soon as the machine picks up anyway. And on my cell phone, if you are not personally in my address book, I ain't answering. Because everything else is spam for the most part. And what's interesting, and I can't find the article I had found at the time I saw this article. There was an article on, and I'll try to find it for the show notes, on the nuclear option to fixing spam calls. And that was basically on...
Don't have a phone?
Yeah, that'll do it. there was an iOS one and an Android one, but since I don't have an Android phone, I don't remember that one at all. But on the iOS one was to put everybody that you will answer the phone call in as a favorite and put your phone on do not disturb.
Oh, yeah,
all day long.
You could do that. Yeah.
And that would be the nuclear option. And the thing that gets me, so not only do you get spam phone calls like this, but spam texts. And I don't have an unlimited text plan because I don't text. I use iMessage and stuff for most people. Mm-hmm. And so spam texts on my wife's phone, because she doesn't have any texts because she doesn't want a smartphone, cost a quarter, even an incoming text. And we've tried to, you know, tell our cell carrier, we don't want text on that phone, period.
Right. You can't do it.
Which
you?
Is not an option. So because that, there was a spam that was happening where they would text you and auto sign you up for something with it.
Oh, nice.
So we at least have, you can't sign us up for anything without a special code that we have to manually enter in. So at least that stopped them trying to do like $10 a month reoccurring charges via spam text.
Right.
And, you know, the carrier's not incented to disallow that.
No, of course not, because they're going cha-ching.
Yeah, so we at least got it. Nothing will get charged until you put in a special code. And I think we've both lost that code on purpose, so it doesn't exist. But it's still, the spam texts still cost us on her phone a quarter every time they happen.
That's crazy.
And it's like, we are doing absolutely nothing. We've said turn off texting. The carrier will not allow us. And now with the spam calls, all the carriers are starting to offer special services for pay to identify suspected spam callers.
Yeah, well, I've read
another
about that
rip-off.
Too. That to me is like, really? Really? You know, and all it needs to do is be wrong and block people out that shouldn't be blocked, which will be bad. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea of a service to prevent that is also kind of a little insane.
Yeah.
Do you know much about the shake and stir protocol that validates a call as a real call? Because I imagine even a robocall is really theoretically a real call, right? It's just
This was a security thing that they were doing to identify if the phone being answered or outbound was done by a human holding a phone versus like an auto dialer.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what it was, that actually identifies based off of the accelerometer on the device that it's a real phone happening or not.
Huh.
But of course, as soon as that's identified, all you have to do is code that into your spam app to simulate the shaken. I think that's what it is. Because I know there was another thing on a security thread that was going on that was talking about how some of the smarter malware on cell phone will actually not activate if the accelerometer is not identifying that the phone has been used, quote unquote. So when you think about if you're a security tester and you're trying to figure out malware, you tend to have like a workbench with phones attached to it and you're running different things on them. And so those are not behaving like real phones at that point. So I think it may be related to that. I'm not positive, but we'll have to look at that. But yeah, I assume it's related to that.
Taking a quick spin of it, this TransNexus article seems to show that it's a way to not allow spoofing of caller ID. It's a security token-based structure that validates that a calling party is in fact a real calling party versus you've got an inbound call from the Ottawa police.
So this is going to try to address the Naver spoofing problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like here. But, but I like the accelerometer one too. That just would be problematic with a landline, I suppose, right?
Yeah. No, that one, and like I said, I thought I was getting it a little bit mixed up. That one's based off of the security stuff, identifying where malware identifies, should I expose myself because the phone's behaving normally, or should I hide because, you know, don't execute all the spam code to, like, you know, do Bitcoin mining or right? Don't run any of that code as if the phone is not showing behavior from the accelerometer.
Right. Okay. So thinking about telephony and problems, there's been one that's making big waves here recently about the FaceTime eavesdrop bug. So said simply, this is where someone initiates a FaceTime call and you're actually able to listen and hear in on the receiving party's device even before they answer.
So let me clarify that, because that's not accurate.
No, it isn't. No, that's what I thought it was.
No, it's much more specific. So what happened was in the group FaceTime option, so there was a bug on the servers at Apple. So if I were to start a FaceTime call with you, audio, and before you answer, I slide up from the bottom and I add myself as an additional party to the call. So now I've gone into group FaceTime. At that point, the server bug has a pointer problem. Instead of turning on my audio, it turns your audio on.
Oops.
So now I can listen to you without you answering. Then here's where it gets really bad. You then hit the side button on the phone to just shut up the phone.
Right.
And that turns on the camera.
Yeek.
Okay. Now, this has been all over the news over the last week. And the reason I threw this one into the show notes for us to talk about is I've heard a couple of different discussions and a lot of people freaking out in every direction on this one. And I just wanted to give my understanding of what happened and then give my opinion of what I think and kind of get your opinion on it too. So what happened is this bug was identified by a 14-year-old. His mother called Apple through the product security group and said, hey, we've identified this repeatable problem. And would like to understand, you know, kind of the bug bounty process. That's a little bit of oversimplification, but they did mention Apple's security bug bounty. The person at Apple who answered the phone in product security gave what appears to be the totally wrong answer, which was, I'm sorry, but before we can go any further, you need to open up a bug report through their bug radar process,
right?
Which required the the kid and the mom to actually open up an Apple developer account. So set up the account, raise the bug as a bug report. Well, of course, if you've raised any bug reports for a large corporation like I have during beta testing, that really takes a long time before you get any responses back. So in the process between that, a week time passed and the bug was made public. As soon as the bug was made public, within, I think it was somewhere less than 5 hours or so, Apple turned off group FaceTime on their servers. So anybody using group FaceTime around the globe, it stops working at that point. The latest article I saw this morning says a bug fix is probably coming out today or in the next couple of days, that they've identified where the problem is and they're fixing it.
Server side, they've fixed it, I think is what I read,
And then they've got to put a fix out that then enables it back on the phones sometime.
Right.
Probably early next week. Now, so those are, to the best of everything I've been able to read and listen to and understand, the particulars of the case. So, I've heard people complain, Apple didn't respond fast enough. I've heard people complain, oh, it's just a bug. Everybody has bugs, so, you know, that gets fixed. And my opinion on this was, I think for a large corporation, other than the total screw-up of telling them open up a radar, I thought Apple respond quickly once the bug was made publicly known. And I think putting the mother and son into the developer thing caused their frustration, which made them go totally around the process of security bug reporting, which usually is like 90 days from the time you notify until the time you go public with it. So you give corporations time to fix the problem. So shame on Apple, shame on the family, shame on everybody else. But from a security vulnerability perspective, I thought the problem was resolved quickly and appropriately.
So here's the big question. Did you turn FaceTime off on your phone?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because it only happens with group FaceTime.
Yeah, scenarios. And those were killed within 5 hours. And during that time period, I did not get any FaceTime requests.
Yeah.
Missed or otherwise. Cool. What's your opinion?
I had not read as much as you had on this, obviously, because I got the story a little bit wrong from the beginning. So my feeling is these are sort of things that are part and parcel this day and age. You got to be aware of it. You got to be aware of what you toss in the garbage. Like the TechCrunch article says that, internet connected devices hold those sort of things for a long time and can relinquish passwords and stuff like that.
Yeah. I know we've only got 1 minute to talk on the show, so we'll just throw that one in the show notes for people to read up on. But I think that's a great example of people just don't understand security anymore.
Yeah. Yep, and it's tough. Hey, you had something really cool that we were talking about before we started with the show on this audio kit. What's the story on that?
So real quick, this is what I'm playing with right now. Audio Kit Synth 1 is a open source project that's available on the Apple App Store to design and build a full-featured synthesizer to run on the iPad. It's amazing. It's really, really cool. I've played with it for probably 6 months now. However, this week they released the iPhone version. Uh-huh. And holy crap. If you're into electronic music at all, I highly recommend you download this. The source code's available, I believe, out on GitHub. You can actually see how they built it. You can build your own version of it. It's so cool. It's so amazing. Highly recommended.
Super cool. Super, super cool. I'm going to close out on one thing that you found here, too, that I just thought was really, really fun. This is in the Design You Trust blog about famous classic album covers that have mashed up with Star Wars characters. So these are, you know, very famous albums. And as you scroll through them, they are replaced with someone from the Star Wars family somewhere or another. And the one that just grabbed me that I thought was too funny was Chewy Lewis and the News. That is just too much fun. And the album is called Four, which is four in Roman numerals. So yes, that's just great.
Awesome stuff.
And there's more than that that's great too, but that one kind of grabbed me. All right. Well, with that, team, we are at time for the episode today. Hope you're enjoying this. Drop us a line, drop us a tweet, drop us, I don't know, $20. No, just kidding. Let us know.
Just don't drop us.
And we're eager to come back at you next week with more interesting games, gamification, news, robotics, and artificial intelligence, and all kinds of other good fun stuff. And until then, have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.